Hi, I'm Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. Our podcast is made possible by Subaru, and we've got a message from them coming up after the podcast. So stick around.
Hey there, listeners. I'd wager that many of you are listening to me right now on your phone. And if you are, then you should check out the NPR One app for your phone. You can use it to listen to StoryCorps and a whole bunch of other great podcasts and radio stories that are hand-curated just for you. It's kind of like Pandora for public radio. You tell the app what you like, and it gives you more of that. It's called NPR One, and you can find it on your app store now. That's NPR One, and that's spelled out O-N-E. It's the StoryCorps podcast. I'm Michael Garofalo. We're just 1 week out from Thanksgiving, which means it's time again for the Great Thanksgiving Listen. That's our nationwide effort to record as many interviews as possible over Thanksgiving weekend using our smartphone app. We started this last year, in 2015. We asked you, our listeners, to take part, and we got teachers and schools involved so that high school students would interview their parents and grandparents in the hopes of documenting an entire generation over 1 weekend. And whether you participated last year or not, we'd love for you to be part of the Great Thanksgiving Listen Year 2. It's an opportunity to ask people about who they are, what they've learned in life, and how they want to be remembered. This year, too, we're also hoping it'll foster conversations about the election, with questions like, what were your feelings when you learned the outcome of the presidential election? What are your hopes going forward? What are your fears? And how do we come together at this time of extraordinary division in our country? So in the hopes of sparking your interest, we're bringing you an encore of an episode we did last December after the first Great Listen, in which I sat down with StoryCorps' digital editor, Andrew Goldberg. Let's jump right in. So it's fair to say that at this point, you've listened to more app interviews than anyone else on the planet.
I think so. I would be surprised if anyone has listened to more than me. I'd love to talk to them about it.
How many have we actually recorded?
So over the life of the app, which is less than 1 year, more than 70,000. And just for the Great Thanksgiving Listen, this short period of time, more than 50,000 interviews.
Just to give listeners a little context, traditionally, StoryCorps records about 6,000 to 7,000 interviews a year.
And we did that in 1 day. We did that on Thanksgiving. And then if you go just a couple of days later, because this was a homework-related assignment, when everyone was rushing to upload their homework on Sunday night after Thanksgiving, we did about 15, 16,000 in that single day.
Can you talk a little bit about what that homework assignment was and how this Great Thanksgiving Listen worked?
So while everyone was welcome to participate in the Great Thanksgiving Listen, one of the things we wanted to reach out and do is talk to teachers and ask students to take part in this, find somebody, an older generation, a grandparent, somebody they knew, you know, who maybe they haven't sat down and had a serious conversation with before, and record them, ask them questions about their childhood, their life, share their wisdom. So a lot of schools were involved, and it was part of a larger homework assignment, which was really wonderful.
So when you listen to these interviews, do they sound significantly different from something that was recorded in one of our soundproof booths with a facilitator present?
Sure. These things are really in-the-moment recordings. You hear sometimes cars passing by, crickets in the background. You hear televisions on. You hear people preparing meals. You hear other people who are listening in from another room, occasionally interjecting a question or, you know, sort of clarifying a point that they don't feel they were well represented in. So it's really a real moment where you're listening in into people's real lives.
Yeah, it's almost like you can hear life going on in the background. And we have an example now. This isn't a story, but it's just to give you a little bit of flavor of what some of these interviews sound like.
There's 13 children in the family. My oldest brother's name is William. Next to the oldest is Bill. My older sister is named Elder.
When I listen to this, what I hear is a grandmother being recorded by a grandchild, maybe sitting on her front porch in a country road, because what you hear is the sounds that you would expect to hear on a quiet country evening.
Another boy, and his name was Edward, and had another boy, and his name was Jim, had another boy, and his name was Richard, had another boy, and his name.
I'd like to imagine, not knowing these people, that this is one of the places this woman likes to sit and have conversations, maybe in the evening.
It's definitely a different kind of document that StoryCorps is now collecting. So even though these interviews sound different, we still hear that magic that's in a traditional StoryCorps interview that we've gotten used to. Like, there's still moments of honesty. People are discovering things about each other. And this is one of my favorite examples of that. It's a granddaughter interviewing her grandfather. And she asks him a question that's pretty typical of a StoryCorps interview. And you can tell the way that her grandfather answers is a surprise to her.
Is there anything you regret having not told somebody?
I don't know if you would call this a regret, because actually it was prevented. My mother lived in Brooklyn, and I was working one day a week in Brooklyn, and I would normally stop by to tell my mom that I was on my way home, and she would be sending me back with either my favorite meal or something that your mother really liked. And on this particular day, I was really in a rush, and I took whatever package my mother had ready, and I headed for the door. And my mother called back to me, and she said, you're not even going to kiss me goodbye. And I stopped immediately, and I went back, and I kissed my mother. And I said, I'm sorry, Mom. Well, that following Monday morning, my mother was struck and killed by a car. So it was the last time I ever saw my mother. I mean, I could have very easily gone out the door and never told her I love her, and those words would have been really lost forever. And it's not quite the answer to your question, but that's what came to my mind in any case.
It definitely answers the question.
Yeah, I mean, it's not your typical grandchild-grandparent interaction. And a lot of these interviews take a little time to warm up, but if both people are committed to them, then you end up learning something about the person. And I think that's what we were always hoping for, that people would take it seriously enough, because these are young kids asking, teenagers asking the questions, who are not professional interviewers.
What have been your impressions of these kids, these 13, 14-year-old kids who are doing the interviews?
I was sort of blown away by them, to be totally honest. I think interviewing is a hard skill. I think people don't always listen. They ask a question, they feel like they got it out, and now it's just a matter of moving on to the next one. And I was really impressed with how much sort of they committed to following up, listening, saying, oh, you said this. I wasn't expecting to hear that. Let me ask you something that popped into my head because you told me a story I wasn't expecting to hear. Or maybe I've wondered this and it's not really what I was planning on asking you, but you seem like you're in a place where I could ask you that question.
And this next example was actually recorded on Thanksgiving. So you may hear in the background, you may hear the sounds of a family having Thanksgiving. And it's a 13-year-old girl interviewing her grandmother. She's asking about her grandfather, who died when she was very young. And she goes totally off script in this clip we're going to hear. And it's just really great interviewing.
No one ever told me this. Like, my mom won't tell me, where did he die and, like, how did he die?
He died in my bedroom. And the night before he died, for some reason, he couldn't sleep and I didn't sleep. And we were just talking about our lives, when everybody was a baby, when mommy was a baby. And we talked till 4 o'clock in the morning. And my last words to him were, well, you could sleep in the morning, but I got to get up. So why don't we just end this conversation and go to sleep? And he never woke up.
Think that was fate?
I think it was fate, because we shared our whole life that night. And why would we have chosen that night to do it?
Yeah. This also isn't a question, but it just popped into my head. Why don't you want to date again? Like, do you think that, I don't know, like, when I watch these shows, they're saying, like, he doesn't want me to or something like that?
No, I don't think Grandpa would have a problem with, I think if it was the reverse, Grandpa would be married now. I know Grandpa would be married now. I've had, like, about 4 different people in my life that I dated for a little bit. I think what happens is you get kind of independent, and I like to do what I like to do when I like to do it without answering to anybody who I didn't share my life with. Like, anybody I'm going to meet now, I just don't really want to give my independence to somebody that I just meet on the internet or something.
Yeah.
You know, that's not sort of a throw-off answer. She took the question seriously, and she gave an adult answer to a 13-year-old kid.
I just love how honest she is about it.
Yeah.
So going back to this idea of kids being really good interviewers, there have been some really clever uses of the app.
One of the most impressive uses, I would say, was a young girl who used it to interview her father, who's from Laos, and he does not speak English.
Hello, my name is Annie Yang, and I'm 16 years old, and I'm speaking with Cher Yang, who is my dad. I will be translating the question to him, and he will talk to me back in Hmong, and I will translate it in here. What was your first impression when you came to America?
你嚟到嗰度做地球咪噶，嗰个博地球咪噶种嘢。
He says the buildings are really pretty. He saw cars and streets, and it wasn't like how it was where he came from, where there was no roads or anything. What was your first job?
Daddy, 头嗰度做一个海后里一个铁衣阿姐。
My dad says that his first job ever in America was sewing backpacks. His pay was $7.50 each hour.
When I listen to an interview like that, and when he describes, you know, like the cars and all the things we take for granted, you realize how amazing it is to look at something for the first time when you first fly into a city and you sort of just look around and try and get your bearings.
Yeah, and it also makes me think about something that Studs Terkel, the late oral historian, said about StoryCorps when we first started. It was at Grand Central Terminal, and he was there to cut the ribbon on our first booth. And he said, you know, we know the name of the architect of Grand Central, but who swept the floors? You know, StoryCorps would give those anonymous people the chance to be heard. And, you know, this is a guy who makes the backpacks your kids wear to school. And his story is now in the Library of Congress.So something that keeps coming up a lot in these interviews, much to my delight, is baseball.
Well, it's just interesting because if you ask people now, baseball is not the American sport, but it does endure over time in a way that, you know, people don't talk about football in the same way that they do about baseball, but baseball stories keep getting passed down.
So this is another 13-year-old. She's sitting at her kitchen table with her dad recording this interview.
Can you tell me a little bit about your childhood?
Well, I was really into sports, baseball in particular. My hero was Roberto Clemente. And when I was 10, I even took a bus to City Hall. I told them I wanted to change my name legally to Roberto, and they promptly called my mother and told her to come pick me up. But my father lived in Indianapolis, and I lived in Pennsylvania. And I would spend a week with him in the summertime. And when I was about 6 or 7, he came to pick me up.He bought me my first mitt and a baseball, and we drove to Indianapolis. And the whole way out, every time I asked him to play catch, he would pull the car over at the nearest rest stop, and he would play catch with me for as long as I wanted. I must have asked him 10 times on that drive, and every time he stopped.
Do you think you're like your dad in any way?
Well, neither one of us have hair. But other than that, we were really very different people, and that's one of the things I actually cherish most about him. He always accepted me for what I was. If we were strangers and we just met, you know, in a bar or whatever, we really wouldn't agree with each other on very many things, but we respected each other.
So, Andrew, at the top of the podcast, you mentioned that one of the things that we're hoping to capture with this app is wisdom. And I love that last line of that story that, like, you can have nothing in common with somebody but still respect them.
And there is some wisdom, you know, it's interesting that comes out after listening to, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these interviews. And most of it boils down to try a lot of different things with your life.Get along with people, be as nice as you can to people, and enjoy yourself because it goes very quickly.
And one of my favorite pieces of wisdom, even if it is a little tongue-in-cheek, comes from this New York dad.
My advice is don't grow up. It's a trap.
Let's wrap up this episode with just two more stories. The first one is an interview between two teachers, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.Two teachers who were preparing for the Great Thanksgiving Listen. They wanted to give it a shot. They didn't want to just, you know, have their students take part and not do it themselves. So they sat down. These are upstate New York teachers, and one of them tells just a great story about grandfather.
My grandfather, for a very brief time, worked at the post office. He was just a mail sorter, kind of like a clerk. One day, the postman who delivered the mail...called in sick, and they asked my grandfather, said, Bill, will you deliver the mail today? And he said, yeah, sure, no problems, I'll deliver the mail today, thinking that the job was not too tough. And needless to say, he lasted one day as a delivery man before he said, I can't do this anymore. You know, he said that he almost had a heat stroke trying to deliver the mail one day. So my grandparents then, you know, because of this experience, were very, very respectful towards their mailman. His name was Bucky the mailman. Whenever Bucky would come to the door, they would invite him in, and they'd give him, you know, a glass of iced tea and a sandwich. And I can remember being there one summer, and we were going to go run an errand or something like that. And my grandfather was all, like, shaky and, you know, a little bit nervous. And I was like, "Gramps, what are you nervous about?" And he's like, "Well, I'm afraid that Bucky is going to come to deliver the mail, and we're not going to be here. He won't get his glass of iced tea and his sandwich." What'd he do? He got out his cooler and made him his glass of iced tea and a sandwich and put it in a cooler on the porch so that Bucky could have his sandwich and his iced tea, even if they weren't there. And they did that, you know, every day when he came to deliver the mail. And when my grandmother passed away, we were at the funeral home, and this gentleman came up to us, and I kind of looked at him. He looked somewhat familiar, and I introduced myself, and he said, "Hey, I'm Bucky the mailman, and I'm here because, you know, your grandparents cared about me." And that's how my grandfather was. Always cared about people.
It's great. There's that, yeah. Sort of leaves me a little speechless. It just tells you a lot about a person.
You know, one of the things that I've heard Dave Isay mention a lot about interviewing is that a microphone can give you the license to ask a question that you might otherwise shy away from. And in this last interview that we're about to hear, it's a granddaughter interviewing her grandfather. Now, her grandfather is blind, and she opens the interview by asking how he lost his sight. And you get the sense that this is a question she might not have asked if she hadn't sat down for this interview. Now, the recording quality on this one is not that great, but the content is worth hearing.
I was blinded in 2001 while I was driving my car. There were three young boys up on top of a bridge. One of the young boys, by the name of Jacob, dropped an 8 to 10 pound rock off the bridge. It came through the windshield of my car and hit me in the face. It literally broke every bone in my face. And at that time, I lost both of my eyes.
How did it feel when you met face-to-face with Jacob again?
It was a number of years before I went to visit Jacob in the prison. And I equate it to kind of like going to your own funeral. I just, you know, it was like, I'm going, but I don't want to go. I'm going, but I feel like I'm going to be sick to my stomach. But I knew if I could meet him and he could see me as a person and I could see him as a person, that it would help me to deal with forgiving him, but more moving on with my life. You know, when something devastating like this happens to you, normally our reaction is to react with violence and hatred. And I didn't want my children and my grandchildren to be subjected to such violence and hatred in their life.
Well, I thank you, and I'm glad that you inspire me to do good.
Wow.
And I love you.
Thank you. Wow.
When he talks about his blindness, what he tells her is not a conversation they've had before this interview in such detail.
What I love about the end of this interview, too, is when he says, "Wow," when she thanks him, because it just goes to show that being interviewed really means a lot to people, even if when they go into it, they're not expecting it to.
You know, some of the sweetest parts of these interviews that I've listened to are when they end. Sometimes they cut off quickly, and that's unfortunate, but oftentimes they say, "Well, that's it. You don't want to keep going." The person who initially was reticent to start it, and there's always, almost always, a thank you, or "I love you," or "Let's do this again," or "Hey, I have more I would like to talk about when you have the time to sit down with me." So it's a special time, and it's been great to listen to, but even the ones that, you know, obviously, thousands and thousands didn't make this little listen, but, you know, even those belong to those people, and those are little gems they can hold on to and share and listen to back again over the coming years and days and months.
And we should say that if you want to browse through these interviews, they're on a website called storycore.me. They're unedited, full interviews just as people uploaded them, and you can browse through and listen to bits and pieces of them or listen to the whole thing.
It's a great way to dip in and out and sort of get an idea of what you have in common with other people.
So you'll hear more stories from the app on the podcast next year in 2016. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us and bringing these stories on.
Thanks. And thanks for everyone who recorded with the app and uploaded. And it's really been a phenomenal year listening to these.
That's it for this episode of the StoryCorps podcast. We need to give a special thank you to Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister from Long Haul Productions, who have been helping us edit these interviews from the app and the Great Thanksgiving Listen. For the music used in this episode, go to our website, StoryCorps.org. While you're there, make a reservation for your own interview or find out how to download the app and do it yourself. For the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Michael Garofalo. Thanks for listening.
Dave Isay again. Some things are important to leave behind, like the voices of the people we love through StoryCorps. Some things, not so much, like garbage. When Subaru builds cars, not one thing goes into landfills. Subaru is working towards a goal of making garbage in landfills a thing of the past. Subaru, who believes that who we are is what we leave behind.
Have you heard NPR's newest podcast, How I Built This, hosted by Guy Raz? It's about innovators and entrepreneurs and the stories behind the movements, companies, and products that they created. Each episode captures triumphs, failures, and insight from the founders of some of the world's best-known companies. Find How I Built This now on the NPR One app and at npr.org/podcasts.